If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Watch your back, Sean Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
It's a Coco Nono episode today.
Sure is.
Or, as I like to say, Coco Yes Yes.
I almost forgot. Another Coco Nono? Incredible! Coco Nono?
It's a hell of a combination.
Drink or be gone.
I think I've had enough already.
This is gonna help me?
The antidote!
Another Coco Nono?
Bullshit!
Bullshit!
Incredible!
Another Coco Nono? Coco Nono?
Coco Nono?
More isn't better.
It's fun to go to a local Mexican restaurant that has a pina colada dispenser and order one up at two. That's what I did.
Yeah! You've got a walkable frozen pina colada.
Yeah, I walked down the street, picked one up.
Wow.
We have a whole, like, segment about what we're drinking. So, like, we should start that segment, right? What are you drinking, Ben?
I am drinking a shoot from the hip mango pina colada.
Oh, so we're kind of drinking the same.
Yeah, I did, rum, lime, sugar, coconut milk. I didn't have coconut cream, so I did a little coconut milk and then, you know, handful of frozen mango chunks instead of pineapple.
And you're drinking it out of the hoof.
Yeah.
From Star Trek Las Vegas. That's great.
My wife and I have been doing a lot of purging of crap from our house and garage lately.
Wow.
And this was a recent bone of contention because it had been put up in a high cabinet and she was pulling stuff out of that cabinet and she was like, Surely I can get rid of this. And I said, no, Garrett Wong is going to buy this off of a internet auction someday.
That's what's great about having a home studio. That is suddenly studio decoration. That's mm-hmm. what that is. It's not for house. It's for work.
Yeah, exactly. So, it came out good, though. It's a nice drink, I have to say. It was a little shameful to, while my baby's daycare provider was sitting in my living room eating her lunch.
Yeah.
I went in there and got a bottle of rum from the table next to where she was eating.
Where does she think babies come from? I don't think you need to feel bad about that at all. Rum is what keeps the childcare employees in this country employed, probably.
She said, oh, thank you for getting some of that job security and helping yourself to it.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, how about you? That's a pretty down the middle but very well-made pina colada, if memory serves.
It is, except I think I jumped the gun on their pina colada slushy machine because I rolled in there.
Oh.
Just to let the viewers know, this is about 2 in the afternoon that we're getting on the mics.
Yeah.
It turns out it was a little early for the frozen pina colada machine to be fully frozen. So I got, like, I think most people will understand, like, the Slurpee machine style consistency when it's not quite all the way there.
Yeah.
Still really cold, but just a little, I'm holding it up to the camera for the viewers, just a little thin.
Yeah, yeah. It's got a real, like, rhinoceros semen consistency.
And what the guy offered was like, yeah, do you want me to just put that over ice? And in my head, I'm doing the math. I'm like, no, I'm going to put it over ice. I want all of the booze.
Yeah, yeah. Don't try and step on my pina colada.
Yeah, so I said no. I drank a bit of it on the way home. On the walk home, I should say. Because I was walking.
Responsibly.
And then, yeah, I added some ice cubes to it. But fortunately for Windy, I've kept it in the plastic cup so that there shouldn't be a lot of clanking. And here we are.
I think it's fun that they gave it to you in a to-go container. That's really great.
Yeah, I love it.
I also have like a backup tequila seltzer in a can thing.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling good and I want more.
I did a little floater and stir when I got home. I added ice, but I added also a little topper.
Nice.
Because I drank it down a little bit on the walk. I had to fill it back up again, so...
So that's part of the consistency issue.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be one cup only for this one. I think that'll set me up nice.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't really have much to add to this, Marin. I think we should probably get into the episode that we came to talk about today.
Yeah, pretty easy one to figure out, right? There's no kind of processing of clues to make this story go, Ben. It's Star Trek Voyager Season 6, Episode 6. Riddles.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
And it's the first time Roxanne Dawson has been in the big chair. She's in the Star Trek Directors Club with this one.
I didn't realize that. I didn't catch the director credit as it went by. That's great.
Yeah.
She's still directing a lot of TV from what I understand.
I think
she's in the rotation on that Apple TV series Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that her episodes of that were really terrific, season one. I think there might be a new season of that coming or already out.
Well, pretty disappointing start to the episode from jump with Neelix's ambassador's log. And I don't know who his presence is more disappointing to, the viewer or Tuvok with whom he has road tripped.
Yeah.
It's just them in the shuttle. And Tuvok has no interest in these time-wasting games that Neelix wants to do.
Species Starship or Anomaly is the fuck, marry, kill of Star Trek, right?
It really is, yeah.
Is Species fuck? Because Species the movie is a movie about an alien that fucks.
I'm almost positive this was a game that came up on Star Trek Discovery early on, right? That the crew played?
Oh, shit.
Do you remember that? I kind of remember that.
There's got to be a memory alpha entry for this, right?
Yeah, you would think.
Well,
you would think, but I didn't click.
Somebody will have to do that research because it's not going to be us.
Is this the first time that Neelix and Tuvok have been together on a mission since Tuvix? I think it is.
Tuvix really looms over this episode.
It really does.
And goes unmentioned.
How much more fun would it be if it were mentioned? Kind of a lot.
I think that would really up the fun factor.
I think so, too.
Yeah, so a riddle is proposed. And this is like a, we can occupy our time by me doing riddles to you, and you can improve the quality of your mind, Tuvok.
Very well. One riddle.
I want to do a riddle about as much as I want to hear about a person's dream. Just leave me out of that.
I feel like I'm on like video-based social media apps. That's a real genre. Like a, they tell you the premise of a riddle and then they're like, come back for part two to find out the answer. And it's like mainly just a way to game the algorithm. Like if you watch long enough to hear it and you're like kind of going nuts trying to think of the answer, then you go into their account and like engage with it.
That's not a cliffhanger to me.
Yeah.
I just walk off that cliff. I'm not grabbing hold of anything.
You've always been the wily coyote of logic games.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so exhausting to be around Neelix. We all see it.
Yeah.
Tuvok needs to put on headphones or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tuvok kind of has headphone face in which, like, he shouldn't have to put on headphones for you to understand just by looking at him. If you sit next to him on a plane, he's not the type you want to just chat up.
Right. That's what those like really, really expensive Apple over-the-ear headphones are about. It's like a $500 stranger talk insurance policy.
If that's the case, they may be worth the investment for me.
Yeah, no kidding.
I have to say, I am not, I think it will become obvious as to why this is, I am not besieged upon by this a quarter of the time that my wife is when she travels.
Yeah.
I think it is an unfortunate thing that people are so comfortable just chatting up lady strangers especially and just like bothering them. Shut up.
Yeah. Well, you look a lot stabbier than your wife.
I do. Yeah. I've got Tuvok face.
I would prefer some peace and quiet.
So Tuvok is like hanging out in the back of the shuttle where he's gone to take some refuge from Neelix and notices that something's going on one of the computers back there. And he radios up to Neelix and he's like, hey, man, what are you doing with the aft tactical computer? It's really weird that it's just going right now. And
he's like, it doesn't seem like something that an ambassador, and he uses like live long and prosper fingers to do the quotes, would have access to. What you doing?
Yeah, what are you up to? This moment really confused me because the way Neelix responds is very much like a guy who is trying to get away with something would respond. He's like, what? What do you mean? I'm not doing anything. Nothing.
Were you at Haunted House?
No, I jacked off.
For 15 minutes?
Yeah.
It's not a great way to cover for what you're really doing.
Right, right.
So Tuvok is like scanning whatever's going on over here with his tricorder, and we see kind of a shimmery effect. Somebody's got a cloaking field, and a phaser comes out of it and hits Tuvok, and it's like another innovation in fucked up face makeup from the Voyager fucked up face makeup department, which I assume is its own separate sub-department from the makeup and hair department, right?
They've been busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the front, Neelix can only listen to this attack. And when Neelix pops into the back, he sees Tuvok flopping around on the floor as the camera spirals upward. And that really made me wonder how much Roxanne Dawson learned from Jonathan Frakes, because that's a Frakes move right there.
The Star Trek film school really teaches a specific style, it would seem.
There's a whole semester about God Shots with Frakes.
Yeah, he teaches God Shots 301, which, like that's the really advanced level.
How disturbed are you if you are on Voyager and you get the Mayday call from Neelix? I would assume very disturbed.
Yeah, that's not good. We come back and we're in the like emergency room scene. It is the captain, the doctor, and Neelix tending to the vibrating and twitching Tuvok. No Paris, no other personnel in the room. And only a clip show device seems to help in slowing down whatever is causing Tuvok to writhe.
They do that thing where they ask Neelix, what happened? And Neelix has nothing useful to provide other than the story of him being like Kramer driving the bus and continuing to make the stops. He's like, yeah, so Tuvok went down and then like, it was up to me to fly the Delta Flyer and I did.
They're like, Neelix, MacGruber remembered the license plate that drove away.
Fuck you, fuck you.
Yeah, Neelix, you had one job. And actually, no, you had two, because the one job was flying the Delta Flyer. Good job. But
you did part one.
Not a great witness is Neelix.
No. So they come up with the idea, like, they were on a diplomatic mission to talk to the Kasat, and maybe the Kasat will know what happened. And so they head over to, I guess, the Kasat part of the sector, and they welcome Nurok aboard.
Wouldn't you have killed for a Nana visitor in this episode just to say Kasat and Nurok? Like, she's so great with those hard consonants, you know?
That would have been amazing.
Yeah.
I immediately was delighted to see that Nurok is played by the guy that plays the feckless lieutenant in Platoon.
Yeah.
Just don't give a flying fuck anymore.
Yeah, he's great. Good clock.
He's got a fun kind of feckless investigator energy here. He's like some kind of deputy police guy who's like obsessed with this kind of long shot theory that there's a secret species around here called the Beneth, or the Shadow People. And they have this history of attacking outsiders that, you know, fly their starships through this part of space. And he's just like obsessed with the idea that there are Beneth and that they can get to the bottom of this if they'll only throw the resources of Voyager behind this theory that, like, apparently he's kind of a joke on his homeworld for believing.
You know who this made me think of? And part of it is Mark Moses's performance, and another part of it is just like his job and his reputation.
Is it your preferred candidate for president, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.?
This guy's like the Fox Mulder of his species, right?
Oh, yeah. That's a good pull.
Like, they make me work out of the basement. I'm kind of laughed at by my peers.
Yeah.
I have kind of a will I, won't I with a coworker that has been dragged along for many seasons.
Yeah. She's really out of my league, and somehow I'm the sex symbol of,
yeah,
like, a lot of television in this era.
Right. So he's got an interesting proposal, right? He's like, with my equipment and your Tuvok and the Delta Flyer, I may be able to prove my wackadoodle theory.
Yeah. I'm the only one that will give it to you straight. The Earth is, in fact, flat.
I'm not here to make Tuvok better. I'm here to give myself credibility. Like, that's kind of the edge to him. Is like, it isn't really about Tuvok for him.
No, it's not. But I think that part of this is just that we live in an era where people are like constantly trying to convince you that there's, like, you know, evidence of an ancient civilization in Antarctica on social media. But like, I was just like, come on, like, why are they buying what this guy is selling?
It's anything, though. It's like the belief in anything, no matter how crazy, is just a different spin. Like, that's free thinking.
Yeah.
When did free thinking become just the name for being stupid?
I don't know. It used to be the name for being, like, open to using LSD occasionally.
I've got no problem with that.
Let's go back to that.
I think the bad free thinkers have taken over the label.
Yeah. And they think that, like, LSD is like a conspiracy from George Soros or something.
It sucks.
Our course is locked in.
What? Listen to me very carefully, because I'm only going to say this once.
Do it.
Nurok is impressed that Tuvok's brains haven't been totally stick-blendered in there.
And he also hears that Tuvok found a cloaking frequency.
Right.
You know, like, the tricorder got fried. It was the first thing that got hit by that beam.
Yeah.
But there is a chance that some useful information is still around.
Did it make you think down the road that that might have been an accident? Like, maybe these aliens didn't mean to hurt Tuvok, and by hitting the tricorder, it was just, like, a weird incident?
There were so many ways I thought that this episode was going to go that it didn't.
Yeah.
This episode surprised me at most turns.
Right.
So they go to Six Bay, and Nurok is really impressed that Tuvok didn't buy the farm in the attack. The EMH is sort of annoyed that he has to entertain this guy, but is saying, like, yeah, like, Vulcans have really super powerful brains, but he's basically in a vegetative state right now, so I think you should leave. And so the captain offers to show Nurok to the Delta Flyer, which also might be a place where they can find some evidence.
The doctor suggests a kind of provocation as a way to get him out of his coma.
If anyone can provoke Tuvok, Mr. Neelix, it's you.
And, like, Neelix's interpretation of this is to wheel in a bunch of personal items on a rock and roller production cart. And, like, suddenly his hospital bed is looking like the floral section of a grocery store.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fragrant, isn't it?
The doctor's supposed to be in there still doing business with other patients.
They did this for Chakotay one time, too, right? When they, like, brought in, yeah, like, stuff.
Yeah, they put the little scroll as a headboard.
Yeah, yeah. With the like magnetic rocks that you could stick to it.
God, that's really true, right? Chakotay sort of set the tone as far as like upper class patients go in the six bay. Like when you're bridge crew, yeah, you get the hospital bed like in its own room with a window.
Yeah, it's really nice. You know, Neelix really trying to set Tuvok up for success and puts on some Vulcan music, if you can call it that.
Yeah. He's also changed. Like someone has changed him out of his uniform. Was that Neelix?
I hope it was the MH. Do you think you can beam someone into a new uniform?
Is that a thing that future Discovery did or past Discovery did? Or was that, did Discovery just like make the uniform in a replicator and that's what we saw?
Oh, yeah. We did see the uniform getting made in a replicator at one point.
Yeah. It would seem as though having it beamed onto you would suggest like a sort of perfect tailoring.
Right, right.
But then you'd have to stand there nude.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be a tough couple of seconds, I think.
I neglected to put on my uniform.
And a transporter accident could be like worse than zipping your dick up in your fly.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't like that.
You thought Tuvix was bad. What about Tuniform?
Yeah, what about a uniform that cuts your dick in half? That's not good at all.
The Doctor does not like the music selection that Neelix has made, but it does have an effect. Tuvok sits up. He's nonverbal at this point, but he has regained consciousness, and this is great news.
As performances go, Tim Russ's version of Tuvok here begins like a frightened pet. The way that he acts, the way that he's immediately bonded with Neelix.
Yeah, Neelix shows him that the medical tricorder is not going to hurt him by using it on himself first.
This is what Ripley responds to. She doesn't like a hairdryer, so I always use it on myself first to show that it's safe.
Yeah, it's like there's bedside manner and then there's diplomacy.
Right. It's sort of like what you did. Like, Darwin didn't know what to do with babies when he encountered them, and then you had one at him.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you better adapt.
Yeah.
You know, you better get used to this.
See? It won't hurt you.
Over on the Delta Flyer, Narak is finding particles from the attack, and these particles are going to allow him to use his instrument to reveal what the Beneth look like.
Yeah.
And what they look like has tentacles.
They're fucked up, man.
Yeah. Can we use this tech to reveal cloaked ships? That's what Janeway asks. Seems like a great working theory.
It does. Yeah, he's brought his virtual boy over and is working with Seven and the captain. And Seven is able to like up the intensity of his gadget. So they're pretty hopeful that they'll be able to take this and apply it to a bigger system like the deflector array.
Janeway's been away from Tom Mervyn's for a long time. I think she's well-versed in upping the intensity of her gadgets by now, right?
Yeah.
Maravilloso.
We get a check-in with the Doctor who is, you know, talking about how Tuvok's brain is sort of rewiring itself, trying to form new pathways around whatever got damaged. And the Doctor doesn't really know if it's what he's doing or what Neelix is doing that's helping Tuvok get better.
We see a schematic on the computer that sort of shows the parts of Tuvok's brain and the ways that the new pathways are being built. Like, for example, the part of Tuvok's brain that selects people that he'd want to be around has been totally fucked up. And so, like, that filtration process that a person would do to ordinarily be like, Neelix is someone I just want to get a meal from, not have a meal with.
Right.
Like, suddenly that's part of the brain that is really messed up and is figuring out a new way to do things. And that really is the reason for everything that follows in this episode.
It really is. The idea is, like, we need to expose Tuvok to familiar sights and sounds and no more people that he hates, because that's clearly slowing things down. So,
want me to break the episode right now, Ben? Why doesn't someone meld him?
Whoa.
Kind of feels like a meld situation would be on the table, right?
Does Vorik even live on Starship Voyager anymore?
I don't know. Vorik is story convenient.
Yeah. Instead, what they do is walk Tuvok onto the bridge, and Tuvok is in, like, civilian clothes and, you know, walks in with the wide eyes of a child, but is shown over to the tactical station where he starts pushing buttons.
He Wesleys up there on the bridge, doesn't he?
Yeah, I guess he does. He Wesleys until he almost fires the torpedoes that they have very few left of.
This scene made me think of something really specific about having a normal job. And that is, did you ever work in a job where someone left as a coworker? Like, they got another job. They went elsewhere.
Yeah.
But then for whatever reason, they came back to visit or say hi or whatever, or like have lunch with a friend or coworker, and they're walking through. They're like a ghost person. Like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
You left.
Stay away.
And for some reason, they want to like see their old desk or something.
Yeah.
No. It doesn't matter.
I feel like the couple of times that I've had jobs for like actual companies, I have mostly been at like pretty fucked up companies. And there have been a lot of like empty desks or like desks where there's like evidence that somebody used to use it, but doesn't anymore.
Like a Brooks was here desk.
Right. Yeah. And like my wife's job, like, you know, she changed jobs kind of recently, and like she has changed jobs frequently enough in the past few years that like she never really like sets up her office or whatever. And so like she works in these very like impersonal spaces.
So whatever arrangements she makes don't tend to last very long. Is that how you'd describe her?
Yeah, they tend to be sort of fleeting in a way that I find unnerving, I would say. So like if you were, for example, to take her to her workplace, there wouldn't be any personal effects. There wouldn't be familiar sights and sounds.
There would not be a picture of you or Daron.
No.
It could be anyone's desk.
Yeah.
An employee without ties or obligations.
Right. Yeah. A real, you know, rogue operator, if you will. Captain The next stop is the Vulcan Vault, which is where Tuvok lives.
This isn't going to help, right? Because all of his personal shit's still in sixbay. Neelix is like, you must remember this, right? And it's just a regular ass hotel room style quarters. Why isn't this working?
It should look more burgled.
Yeah.
Because Neelix just came in and like helped himself to a bunch of shit.
It would have been great if like Neelix confides, you know, I've been staying in here since you've been in six bed.
You got a bigger tub than I do.
It's a much better room.
So they're down there when they test the Nurok-inspired modifications they've made to the deflector dish. And up on the bridge, when this deflector pulse happens, they see that there is a cloaked ship like right in front of them. And not only right in front of them, but all around them. They're fucking surrounded. And these ships do not take kindly to being exposed and start licking shots at the Voyager.
This is a great moment. I love the scope of the problem that's revealed here. It's not just an isolated ship or couple ships. It's a fleet.
Yeah.
And they don't want to be hailed. That's pretty clear.
It's really like, be careful what you wish for. Like, modify the deflector at your own risk kind of situation.
Yeah.
The bangers that are getting dropped are even happening in Tuvok's quarters. And Tuvok may have had his brain mostly wiped, but he does remember basic earthquake safety. And he climbs under a table.
He remembers that the instructions were to get near something dull and expendable.
I'm here with you. Everything is going to be all right.
After they're out of danger, he reveals that he also has remembered how to speak English.
Yeah. The strategy that Janeway has on the bridge is like, as the ships scatter, she goes to follow one.
Yeah.
And they lose their tail on the one ship they were after by the time it's all over.
The Beneth are fast as hell. What the fuck?
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
Yeah. So Tuvok is talking to Neelix, and I got the feeling that he was sort of like imprinted on Neelix, like a duckling at this point.
Right.
He's like, the only place I really feel safe is in the presence of Neelix.
The idea of Tuvok being skinny Lenny is most apparent here, right? You know what Vulcans are capable of. And when Tuvok starts speaking in his manner of speech, I mean, I can see no other conclusion to the episode than Tuvok hugging Neelix to death or something.
Lenny Tuvok just wants to live off the fat of the land, you know?
Is Neelix going to be the one to shoot him in the back of the head by the end of this experience?
And I get the tinder wrap.
God, that would be dark.
Yeah. So Nurok and Neelix have a meeting with Janeway, and Nurok is like, this guy is talking again, and the particular details of the cloaking frequency may be still in his head, and I gotta find out what he saw, what he remembers.
Right.
And Neelix is sort of arguing the other side of this. Like, he's saying, like, don't interrogate him right now. He's very fragile. He's a simple, like, he just keeps talking about fat of the land and, like, petting mice and stuff. Like, he's not ready.
You can tell Janeway has grown a lot this season because her instinct up top in terms of interrogating Tuvok is opening up a portal for the skinny Slimers to come through. And she's just about to do that before she's like, no, that's not me anymore. That was that one episode and we've moved past it.
Yeah, yeah. And then she's like, turns to Neelix and she's like, why do you have your one hand in a glove?
And then they pan over to Chakotay and a pencil in his hand. Then he snaps.
Tuvok has been sitting on the floor outside of Janeway's office this whole time.
I compared him to a puppy in an earlier scene, and this is maybe the most puppyish of Tuvok here.
Yeah.
Just the curled up by a door, waiting for his master to come back, and that, I guess, is Neelix.
He feels safe around Neelix, but not around Nurok.
And not about Janeway, right?
Yeah. They bring him in and sit him down at Janeway's desk. And Janeway's sort of leaning over him, and Nurok gets in his nook, and they start trying to ask him about what he remembers from being attacked. As I say this, I realize that Nurok is just a contraction of Nook and Tuvok.
You don't want to see the back of him getting into Tuvok's nook. It's the worst part.
So it's all been building to this.
Yeah.
But Tuvok doesn't have anything of particular value to them. Like, they hand him the fried tricorder and it just kind of like takes him back to like a trauma memory, and he drops it and freaks out, and Neelix puts the kibosh on the proceedings.
This is a scene, too, where, like, you know that moment when you hear an aging family member isn't doing well, and then you finally see them, and you're like, you go in with the positivity of someone who is there to bring positivity to a moment that everyone seems to know a little better than you do, like people who have been caring for them.
Right.
This is that moment for Janeway, who's talking to him with kindness and in sort of an expectation about, like, having a hang later or whatever. And sad moment when Janeway is like, I'd love to make it up to you by taking you out to lunch. And unfortunately, Neelix is the only person that Tuvok likes lunching with.
Yeah.
Like, it's only a second, but it's really sad.
It really is. Did you try to cheer him up with some Kalto? Ensign Kim and Neelix hang out with him later, and Ensign Kim is teaching, you know, like the student has become the master kind of way. Like, here's how Kalto works. You love this game.
As the ship's stick man, you know I love to play games involving so many sticks. Right, Tuvok? And that's usually a joke that Tuvok loves, but not this time.
This version of Tuvok thinks that the jumbled mess of Kalto is preferable to a perfect sphere.
I like the way it looks now.
We have to talk about this at some point, and I think it's probably now. But the performance of Simple Tuvok as a kind of like what Tug Speedman would do in order to win an Oscar.
Hats off for going there.
It's such a line, right?
Right.
It's such a line to be wary of if you're an actor. And I want to be clear, like, I think Tim Russ stays opposite the Simple Jack line, but that thought was ever present in my mind as the episode went on, you know?
Right, because, like, I think that recovering from injury, like, I'm a little bit spaced out and not all there, is different from I'm too dumb to go back to work now.
I'm so glad you made that distinction, because I think they are distinct. Like, what we're seeing here is different from Simple Jack in some very specific ways.
Yeah.
I mean, also, like, Tim Russ isn't playing this as a joke either.
No, yeah.
And that helps.
Yeah. Like, when he rage quits Kalto, it's not played for laughs. It's played for, yeah, like, this is a character in pain.
I don't like this game.
Ensign Kim usually doesn't last that long playing Kalto, huh?
I lasted 22 minutes.
Good for him.
Yeah. Nice work, Ensign Kim.
Later in Six Bay, I want to call him Simple Tuvok to, like, make him distinct from pre-accident Tuvok. Is that mean? Is it mean or is it funny? That's the ultimate greatest gen question.
That's the question. I mean, I was writing dumb Tuvok in my notes, and I feel like that's, like, objectively mean.
Yeah, that's way worse. I'm going to go with Simple Tuvok, and I'm just going to get the letters.
Listen. Bill is going to get the letters, you know? Bill gets them first, so consider that before you send them. We know it's bad. We know it's not nice.
Also, like, offer me and Ben a little bit of grace and a little bit of the benefit of the doubt on how we're describing people based on our reputations in the past of being generally people who learn and are nice and kind. Okay? Okay.
We're just trying to come up with a nickname for somebody who has had severe brain damage, okay?
Hey, Ben, if I ever suffer from severe brain damage, you can absolutely fucking call me Simple Adam, and I hope you do.
You don't think I already call you Simple Adam behind your back?
God, I'm positive you do. That is, God, as soon as I finished speaking, like, I could just see the wiffle ball lazily heading for your strike zone.
Oh, yeah, I really dinged that over the back fence. It was easy.
I've got to get that
platinum. Put your platinum where your mouth is.
I've got to get that
platinum.
Atlantic has just struck gold.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. Right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
I'm giving you an order. I'm giving you an order. Is that understood? I'm giving you an order. Just crossed the line.
So Simple Tuvok tells Neelix about what he's learned about himself reading his own file. And he is at least with it enough to recognize that he is not the same man today.
He's not complicated Tuvok anymore.
No.
I can't even play Kaltoe.
He is frustrated and emotional also. And we haven't seen him meditate once.
He has freshened up zero candles, and he doesn't have the, like, Vulcan control stuff. And we've heard a little bit of talk about this. Like, he's experiencing all these emotions, and this is the big scene where he, you know, like, he didn't like the Kalto, but he really doesn't like the idea that he is diminished in the way that he has been. And there's a glass table in the scene with a bunch of his belongings on it. And it seems inevitable what's going to happen to this glass table.
Yeah.
It is fucking shocking that he upends this thing and it does not shatter.
It's made of tough stuff.
What the hell?
Do you think they were expecting it to go and it just didn't?
Either that, or they went down to like a hockey arena and were like, what is the glass made of around here that the guys like check each other into? Because like, we want some of that.
If I worked on Star Trek and the scene called for a glass table to be flipped, and during that scene it did not break, and the director, in this case, Roxanne Dawson's like, all right, that's the print. Moving on. I don't know if I would, like, want this prop around at all. I feel like it could explode at any moment.
Yeah.
Like an unexploded bomb.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like a farmer in a French field finding ordnance from World War I.
Yeah. I don't think it's safe to be around this table anymore.
Yeah. You got to call, like, professionals to come deal with this thing.
Yeah. This is a scene that ends poorly for them both. Tuvok shoves Neelix, and the doctor has to tell him to leave for his own safety. The doctor can be shoved and not hurt.
Yeah.
Shove him all you want.
Speaking of glass, Seven is staring out of the bum out window in Neelix's restaurant after hours when Neelix comes in. Seven is really pondering the, like, how do you find people with advanced cloaking technology problem. And you think that, like, Neelix, you know, like, sometimes the fool will say the thing that makes the smart person realize that they've been
thinking too inside the box in some critical way, and it'll crack the code.
You've been thinking too smart about things. You know, like me and you on this show.
Right. Instead, it is Seven that helps Neelix in this moment.
Wow.
Don't give up on Tuvok. Yeah. Keep working with him. But also, don't try to bring back the old Tuvok. Try to show him how to be a new Tuvok, a simpler Tuvok.
You think the Borgs ever gave up on the idea of Locutus? Hell no. Trust me.
The opposite.
That shit's going to come around. It may not be now. It may not be 10 years from now. But in between 20 and 30 years from now, it's going to be a thing.
And it will change my career. I don't know about yours, Neelix.
It'll be great for me.
Yeah, so the advice is like, you know, Tuvok is changed, has gone through a fundamental change.
I like the brutality of Seven's advice here, though, too, right? Like, she's not exactly right either. Like, Seven is fitting round patients into cube-shaped holes by going like, you know, I was damaged by the Borgs and I figured it out. Like,
yeah.
Tuvok can do the same.
I mean, but she would do that, right? Because it's round escape pods that fit into cube-shaped ships. So, you know.
See what you did? You just explained the entire thing to a simple FOD.
Mm-hmm. Best boss I ever had.
I'm down to the bottom of my hoof, man. I can't help it.
Oh, I'm almost there too. This is great. So in Six Bay, Neelix arrives reinvigorated and with a fresh perspective. Tuvok is there, where I guess he's been living. He continues to live in Six Bay? Maybe.
Well, all his stuff is there, you know.
He spends enough time there to be making origami flowers.
Yeah, he's made a wax flower for Neelix, and this thing is great. And Neelix is, like, so impressed by the act of creativity that Tuvok has done.
He should be more impressed by the really great apology.
I shouldn't have shouted at you. I was angry. I'm sorry.
This is not a big city apology at all. This is great.
This is quad box. Like, I actually talked to a crisis PR firm and, like, had help writing this kind of apology.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say apologies are that great when that happens. This is a sincere apology. And unlike before, where I think maybe it was the newness of what Tim Russ was doing that made me feel weird.
Uh-huh.
I think Tim Russ's takes here are magical. And the way his voice has changed is maybe the most apparent in this scene because he has the most to say. But that combined with how his face seems to have changed, like he's also smiling more.
I like to smile. Me too.
He feels more natural in the situation that he finds himself in. And I don't know, man. I like this Tuvok. He seems cool.
It's a really weird acting challenge, I think, because it's like, I think a lot of the time in Star Trek, when a character is asked to play like a different version of their character, it's like amp up one part or be kind of a caricature of something or play, you know, a sex worker in the old West version of yourself or whatever. And this is like, strip away all the sophistication and control of your character and be like a really like affable, dumb version of your character.
Uh-huh.
And like, how the fuck do you ever do that?
How did you do that?
I don't know how to do that.
I don't know.
I wouldn't know how to play an unsophisticated dumb is what I'm saying. And I'm really impressed.
I mean, I think there's 500 episodes of evidence of that, Ben.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah. And so this inspires Neelix to suggest that Tuvok explore more of his creative side. And we smash cut to the results of that in the restaurant where Tuvok has become the pastry chef of the ship. He's made a Ziggy Piggy for Tom and Harry.
The single greatest ice cream spectacle known to man.
Who think it tastes great. And they're like really impressed with the ingredient combos. He's a real like ChatGPT for dessert recipes.
Yeah, it sure seems that way. I mean, it's not just that he enjoys the process of this, it's that the process has yielded successful results. And that's almost a relief, right?
Right.
It's not like, cool, we can put Tuvix to work in the mess hall, scrubbing pots and pans, and like at least he's got a job. At least like he's off doing something.
Right.
Like it's a way to keep him central as a character if this is how it goes for him. And when Janeway walks in, everyone knows this. She's the final word on souffle quality.
Oh, that is delicious.
I'm pleased that you like it.
She fucking loves it.
She thinks it slaps. She's like, I like this as much as I like vegetable broth. And that's a lot.
Is there a way you could turn this souffle into broth in one of your weird flavor and texture combinations?
She really sneaks this question in sideways. Like, she's like enjoying her souffle and just kind of like, apropos of nothing, is like, hey, by the way, do you remember anything about that extremely shitty and upsetting memory that like almost sent you into apoplectic shock before when we asked you?
There's coffee in what happened on the flyer.
I didn't like this moment at all for Janeway.
It seemed mean, right?
It did. It really did. And like, if it were someone besides Tuvok here, or the simplified version of Tuvok, I feel like they would have clapped back at her pretty hard. But it's bad. It scares him.
There's an amazing shot of Neelix like turning and looking like at the back of Janeway's head with like betrayal in his eyes.
Yeah.
When she does this, he can't quite articulate what he hears. And she's like, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did that. I didn't mean to like make you feel uncomfortable, man. And he uses the like piping bag to put a sine wave on the top of the cake that he's icing.
He's roped all over the cake, Ben.
I guess you can say I sexed it up for you. No extra charge.
And this is the cloaking frequency.
Yeah, so he couldn't access this information directly. That would be too traumatic. This was in the underneath, and it came out in the frosting.
Mm. So many things come out in the frosting.
Yeah.
In that way.
And it's delicious. They've analyzed this frosting. They have the Beneth cloaking frequency, and now they're using it to search a few places in the galaxy. One of these areas is enormous. Like, it's the brightest, glowing, suspicious Beneth part of this area, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not just a ship. It has to be something else.
Yeah, and they do their deflector pulse, and this reveals a giant space station. Nurok's on the bridge, and they're, like, getting ready to start talking to the station when the bangers start getting dropped on Voyager. And Janeway gets them to stop by saying, like, hey, I'm going to dox you. I'm going to post your address on the internet if you don't stop shooting at us.
Yeah, that gets their attention.
Yeah.
They actually want to talk now.
Don't dox people, Janeway.
Yeah. So she's not all the way better in terms of what she would do to manipulate people to get her way, right? I'll not only make it possible for people to know where you are, you'll really enjoy meeting skinny Slimers.
Yeah. So she is prepared to offer them tactical data on other people that they've met around here.
Yeah.
Seems fucked up.
Don't like that.
I hope it's only assholes that they've met. Like, not, it's not tactical data of like the good people.
What's interesting here is what Narok does in this scene, right?
Yeah.
The Beneth is like, we can't trust anyone, and we definitely can't trust fucking Narok. Like, his people might think him a fool and like the butt of a joke.
Yeah.
But like, I don't like that guy, and I hope he continues to be that. But Narok himself makes himself trustworthy by sweetening the deal with his own technology. He's like, look, I will undo utterly what Janeway is threatening to do, and then you can be safe, right? And that's what makes the Beneth accept the deal.
Yeah, he's going to give his photolytic converter technology to them, and they'll be able to further conceal themselves. And it's a bad deal for him because like he will go back and have nothing to prove all of the shit he's been saying. Like, his boss is going to be like, so how'd that go? And he'd be like, I mean, I could tell you, but you're like, there will be no evidence to corroborate what I say.
Yeah. And meanwhile, here's Narak walking around with this photolithic converter that can like see through cloaks.
Right.
See through probably lots of things.
Mm.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
What does that make the Baneth at this point? But by then, Janeway's seen everything. She's seen it all. And the Baneth accept the deal. And in Tuvok's quarters, we find Tuvok listening to jazz.
Yeah.
In the way that I think we all did before a trip to the water park.
Mm.
Get yourself ready for the scary water chutes.
Yeah, and Neelix is like here to sort of break the bad news that they got information from the Baneth that the doctor can use to reverse the neural trauma that Tuvok has undergone.
This is the Tuvok's moment right here.
Yeah.
And for these two characters to not discuss that at all, is it just Neelix knowing that Tuvok wouldn't get the reference?
I think it's partly that and partly that simple Tuvok is too nice and too simple to rage out against this. Because it's very clear that Simple Tuvok wants to be Simple Tuvok.
In a few hours, you'll be yourself again. I am myself.
Simple Tuvok would never have a scene at the end of Tuvok's where Tuvok's like pointed the finger at everyone murdering him.
Yeah. Simple Tuvok instinctively knows this is wrong, but doesn't have the confidence to say this is wrong.
Yeah. Simple Tuvok's just following orders.
Available now in pawnshop.biz, the hashtag Je suis Tuvok shirt and also the hashtag Je suis Simple Tuvok shirt.
Yeah, I like that. That'll be great. Can we make those mugs? I think that'd be a good mug, too.
Yeah, the graphic will be available on lots of different types of products.
Okay.
Pawnshop.biz?
I think Tuvok tragically has arrived at a point where he's comfortable with who he is. And that's a point that I hope to arrive at some point in my life. He's all right with that. And he doesn't take the news of being turned into the previous version of Tuvok as a positive development for him at all.
He really doesn't. It's bad.
He wants to have fun. Tuvok doesn't have fun. Simple Tuvok does.
Simple Tuvok has a ton of fun.
Yeah.
Loves dessert.
Yeah.
They taste good.
But Neelix reassures him. The thing is, Simple Tuvok, you will still experience emotions when we fix you up. It's just in a very Vulcan way. And he's not wrong about this, right? Like, all Vulcans experience emotions. It's just what they do with them that makes the difference.
The argument that the crew needs Tuvok, also one that was leveled against Tuvok's.
Yeah. He needs of the many's, Simple Tuvok here, in a pretty astounding form of that argument.
Yeah. I think that one of the most interesting fears that Simple Tuvok has is they, like, I want to still be pals when this is over.
Isn't it weird, though, that that doesn't quite read on Neelix the way you might hope? Like, as far as friends go, he doesn't have many. Things have been going great here. Like, it is a tragedy for Neelix, too, but Neelix puts on that stiff upper lip. Like, he's, as badly as he's wanted to be a security officer, and as much as Simple Tuvok represents a way to become one, he limits himself in careers by writing for this and limits himself socially, right?
I think that is low-key the worst part of this episode, because he's basically saying, like, you're not as valuable a friend to me as regular edition Tuvok is a asset to the ship. You're too simple for me to be, like, that worried about losing as a friend.
This is almost like the way we were a couple of years into Greatest Gen. Like, you remember how, like, we were friendly, but we were not, like, really good friends because we did not want to destroy the show? But now we're friends.
Yeah.
Now if our friendship goes away, the show definitely goes away.
I was talking to my wife about this recently. She was like, you guys have really, like, you're really, like, getting vulnerable with each other. You like show each other your dark sides now in a way that's like really intense.
I mean, that's great for the show, right?
Oh, it's good stuff.
It's all about what's best for the show, Ben.
Yeah. So they take him down to Six Bay and undo the effects of the Beneth beam. And we get a little button on the episode. Regular edition Tuvok, cleared for duty by the MH, is back in uniform and comes down and sits at an empty table in Neelix's restaurant. And Neelix sort of gets to test, like, how much their friendship has vanished.
How about a celebratory glass of champagne? Tea will suffice.
I think Tuvok is a dick. And here's why. It doesn't matter whether or not you subscribe to logic rules everything around me.
Leem, get the money, dollar, dollar bill.
Because I think it is logical to, after this procedure is done, I don't think his mind has been wiped. His memories are still there of what happened. You gotta roll up to Neelix and thank him for what he did for you. I think it is messed up that Tuvok walks around the ship like everything's fine and completely neglects to recognize the solid that Neelix did for him and like makes Neelix roll up to him in the mess hall. I think that's a dick move by Tuvok, and I don't think it has anything to do with logic.
Do you think that his like tagging Neelix's riddle joke, though, is like the metaphorical version of that? By giving Neelix another punchline for his bit, does Tuvok sort of...
I think that's like the thing that abusive relationships are, which is like dickhead, 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 and then like a little bit of kindness every once in a while is all of a sudden like, you just don't know him like I do.
When he gives me another tag for my riddle,
yeah,
it's like so special.
Yeah, it's not. It's about him.
Wow.
Like, the show believes something differently about Tuvok than I do in this moment.
Yeah.
Which is like, isn't it great that Tuvok has chosen his life of deprivation once again? And the invitation to help prepare desserts at a party in his honor is meant to be a symbol for what this is, that Tuvok is back.
Tuvok is back and dessert is off the menu, boys!
Yeah, it sure is.
Well, I think we know how you feel about Tuvok, but how do you feel about this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like threats, and I don't like you. Understood.
I really like talking about it, and it's one of those like mind-bending Star Trek episodes that is like a great conversation starter.
Yeah.
A great argument starter, really. Thought it was a great first directorial effort from Roxanne Dawson. Like, I like the bookending of the top-down rotating camera shot that mirrors the one in the beginning. I thought that was cool. Like, everything else was, like, right down the middle. Looked good. Felt good.
It's a very actorly episode to be giving to a first-time director.
Yeah, and I wonder about how, like, if you're not the star of this show, like, Janeway's not in this very much, but, like, if it's better for you as a Roxanne Dawson to direct an episode that centers another person on your level in the cast, instead of, like, if you're being made to direct Kate Mulgrew the whole time, I don't feel like that would be as comfortable, you know?
Right, right.
But as it is, I liked seeing Tim Russ this way. I liked seeing all the gears of the gearbox for Tim Russ in this episode. I thought that was good.
It's like seeing 150 springs fly out of a watch.
Exactly.
Sounds like a really bad date. Sucked.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's just like this is a show that denies the existence of Tuvix the episode even now.
Yeah.
And it would be so interesting for that moment to be recognized here. So yeah, that's what I think. What about you, Ben?
I think I feel very similarly to you about this episode. I really enjoyed watching it too. And I definitely felt as I was watching it that there were many, many moments where I felt Tim Russ's performance could have tipped into the like, this fucking sucks and is actively bad.
Yeah.
And I think that it is kind of remarkable how deftly he rides that line.
Yeah.
I didn't make the Simple Jack comparison in my head before you brought it up, but like, I think that that's kind of what it is like he has to find a way to make a character who is like extremely limited in what they can experience and express that doesn't feel like a dunk on that character. I think he did a great job. And I think Roxanne Dawson did a great job directing that performance.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, do you want to go into the Priority One inbox and see if there's anything simple in there?
Hopefully they're all messages at a reading level above where Tuvok was at for most of this episode.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, our first Priority One message is from Ford and SC, and it's to Adam and Ben, and it goes like this. I discovered TGG about 6 months ago, and after a few apps, I realized that if I didn't start from episode one, I'd miss half the jokes. I finished TNG, and I'm halfway through DS9. Thanks to TGG, my wife finally watches TNG by choice. She didn't really care about Trek, but enjoys bad wigs, reused sets, and clever critique. Thanks for all the great pod.
God, what must it be like to be married to a person that also wants to listen to your podcasts? Amazing. You know, this message made me think of the Greatest Generation podcast wiki.
Yeah.
Which has been around for years and years. Greatestgen.fandom.com is where you can make sure you're current on all the jokes we tell. Updated even recently, like with references from Biff Yeager's Regional Ice Complex.
Right.
And Podcast of the Dead. Like, great work's being done over there.
Wow, that's awesome.
And if you're confused about any kind of jokes, here's where you find out.
That's great. Our recent stream, which I think will still be available as of the release of this date. If you still want to catch the re-encounter at Farpoint, it's still available at greatestgentour.com. But my wife was like, we should do something for the premiere, like, you know, have Adam and his wife over and like have a little gathering and, you know, do it up, like have a little celebration. And I was like, I don't think you or Adam's wife would enjoy like the actual show.
No, not at all. Wouldn't happen. Yeah. Let's watch something else.
Yeah, can we put something else on? But yeah, thank you, Ford and SC, and thanks to your spouse as well.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from Mike, son of Fred. It is to Jack, son of Fred. The message goes like this.
I may have dishonored the House of Fred by submitting this request too late. How could I have forgotten my brother's birthday? I hope your birthday was glorious. May you continue to slay your enemies on the tennis court or whatever field of battle you choose.
Wow.
One of the rare Kern voices I managed to get through without spontaneously crying or voice cracking. Ben, I've recently asked friend of DeSoto, Chris Caraba, for vocal exercise advice.
Oh, wow.
Because he's a guy that, like, his singing style is very, like, intense. There's a lot to it.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I'm like, I would love a couple of things that I could do before a show to, like, make sure I don't get into coughing spasms or start crying, as I did at the re-encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work on some stuff, thanks to him.
Are you going
to
start having, like, honey tea before we go on stage or something like that?
If that ends up being the secret, I'll be a little disappointed. Like, I actually want to do a thing, you know? But yeah, I mean, whatever it is, I'm willing to try it because friends of DeSoto are worth it. They're worth our shitty impressions. So that one goes out to Mike, son of Fred.
Yeah. Happy birthday, Jack, son of Fred. It looks like we did miss your birthday by more than a couple of months. But I think the House of Fred is in good standing as of this.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah.
You know, this puts him back in the good column, honor-wise.
Hope so. Well, if you have a priority one message that maybe even includes a character impression, I'm getting better and better at doing those. Go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to submit yours today. Get in the queue. The line is long, but it's not too long.
Yeah, it's worth standing in.
Yeah. Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Oh, man. I think I'm going to give it to Nurok. I like that Nurok is just like he's just like, hey, man, I'm really glad to be here and, like, do my project with you guys. Like, nothing stressing Nurok out. Nurok is interested the whole time. And then Nurok is prepared to throw himself entirely under the bus to just have the knowledge that he was right all along.
I wish we got the postscript to Nurok. Also, Nurok is my drunk Shimoto. But, like, that he pulled it off and this whole thing worked and he has ascended the company that he works for.
Right.
Or like, the political organization he's a part of. I could have hung out with him for just a moment longer. Like, in the way that... what was the episode with Kurtwood Smith and the hair doll and the time ship and all that?
Right, right.
You remember that postscript to that episode where, like, we see him in a timeline where all that shit doesn't happen, but it seems pretty inevitable that it will?
Right.
Like, this is a show that's capable of giving us a postscript side story about a non-cast character that has a post-show life. I wonder about him a lot, and I hope he's okay, and I think he is.
I hope he's okay, but I also like the idea that he goes back and is like, yeah, that didn't pan out, and, like, nothing I can tell you would make you feel like this was worth it at all.
Well, that's just it, right? Because he gave away the technology that would have given him that promotion.
Yeah.
So it's unclear, isn't it, whether or not, like, there's that space in between the giving of and the species using it to further obscure themselves that, like,
right,
maybe that doesn't benefit him at all. It probably doesn't.
Could Voyager have given him, like, some kind of record to take back and show his boss to show that this was something?
Nurok, thank you for your help. Here is a 2 VHS cassette of what you've done here.
And then his boss is like, you gave the photolytic scanner away? Are you fucking... We just find out that these guys actually exist and you gave that away? Fuck!
These guys have tentacles. You're gonna kill someone.
Well, that was a ton of fun to do, Adam. I'm all out of hoof drink. And,
me too. Right on time, I think.
I decided not to get into my tequila beverage, which was... I was taking a car home from the airport and they gave me this tequila beverage, but I was
too
tired. I
got one of those too.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't drink it in the car. I was just too...
Yeah.
I was too tired.
I was too everything to drink in the car. But I'm going to throw it back in the fridge, save it for another day.
Yeah.
The next episode of Star Trek Voyager, Adam, is season 6, episode 7, Dragon's Teeth. Mysterious corridors in space lead to the discovery of an ancient civilization.
Hmm. Do you remember this episode? Is this a familiar ancient civilization?
It is not a familiar ancient civilization. But,
all right.
What is familiar is the game of buttholes. The will of the caretaker, where our runabout is all the way down on square 12 after having gone through a space butthole.
I did that. I did that to us. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. It happens. I'm going to set us up for a die roll. Looks like the only thing we could hit is a quartz bar, which would be a pretty intense follow-up to what we've done here today. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
I feel like Rene Russo in Tin Cup. Like, just roll it, Ben.
All right. I think I hit some kind of a glitch because I went back up the space butthole.
You can do that?
I'm on square 50 now.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
What?
I don't know how to explain what just happened. I didn't think that these space buttholes were bi-directional.
Wow.
But apparently this one was.
What?
Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah, like, no notes.
Yeah, let's not change this at all.
The bug is good, but it is definitely a bug.
Okay.
Yeah.
Square 50.
Fun stuff. We will have a regular episode next week, and I am looking forward to it.
Yeah, you and me both, Ben. I also look forward to the support we get every month at MaximumFun.org/join.
Yeah.
It's a way we can continue to live. It's a way that Wendy can continue to live. And it is so appreciated by all of us here at Uxbridge Shimoda.
It really is. We also appreciate the music made for us by Adam Ragusea, who has a great podcast of his own, the Adam Ragusea Podcast.
I forgot to take my brode, Ben. Have you taken your brode?
I have not taken my brode.
All right,
I'm going to
do that right now. Hey, thanks to Brode for helping us feel a little better after a drinking episode. That's a free plug for Brode.
Thanks to Bill Tilly, the card daddy, who runs the At Greatest Trek social media accounts. Thanks to everybody that tuned in for the Re-Encounter at Farpoint stream. And you got a couple of days left if you're interested in catching that. GreatestGenTour.com.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah. One of the best things we've ever done. I really believe that. I just had such a great time. And, the reviews are in. You know, it's good.
The reviews are mid, but the time was sus. But you're going to love watching it.
Yeah.
GreatestGenTour.com.
FODs love mid-sus times.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Why else would they listen to this?
Exactly.
Thanks to Nick Dittmore, who made our show art, and get something at podshop.biz and all of that great stuff. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager that seems to have gone through some kind of mysterious corridor in space to get us up to square 50. I don't know what the fuck happened.
Oh, that's wild how our game worked like the episode.
It really did.
Wow.
It really did.
Wow.
Make it so.
What?
Make it so. Make it so. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Make it so. Make it so.
Jean-Luc Picard.
What the hell kind of way to act is that?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.